Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Alan.
And welcome to Dice Over Everything, the Miniatures Gaming Podcast.
So, do you like watching people's vacation slideshows? Do you sometimes find that enjoyable?
if they're family, you
push the enthusiasm for it, no matter whether it's good or not.
But
let's pretend they're not family.
Generally, no. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, yes. So actually, unlike some people, despite the memes, I actually enjoy seeing my families, seeing what they do, because, you know, or close friends, because you can empathize with the enjoyment you see on their faces, and you get that, right?
Yeah.
But if they, stranger, went and did something that's freaking awesome, mm-hmm. and I saw pictures of that, yeah. then I could be interested.
Yeah, no, we're probably too exposed to, like, seeing awesome shit in videos, where if it was the first time you ever saw, like...
Hey, sometimes those are our vacations.
Yeah. And there are people's vacations. Like, oh my gosh, first time in the jungle. You're like, holy crap, that's amazing. But then when you've seen, like, 50 of those videos, like, yeah, I don't care. I don't care about your vacation to the jungle.
Yeah, but the first person's vacation mm-hmm. video that you saw in the jungle when they came face to face with like a whole bunch of army ants and they had to run away or get eaten. Yeah, that was cool.
Okay. So
that video of when mm-hmm. they go to the running with the bulls and they get gored. Yeah, that was cool.
Okay.
That was probably someone's vacation. I'm just saying, you don't normally do that, right?
Yeah, I'm going to say you get bored of watching that. But if you want to see it in person, I'm pretty sure you could do that every year.
Get gored every year? I think you'd be
no,
dead.
No, watch somebody. You're going to be dead. You can't get gored every year. The hospital will get tired of
Although every year that you get gored, you're probably more easily gored the year later because you can't move as well.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anyhow. On the note of producing the first vacation video of its kind, we went to Adepticon. No, okay, lots of people go to Adepticon. I think like 8,000 people went to Adepticon this
more
year.
More and more people every year.
2024. But
8,000 is pretty good.
Some people are thinking that it was noticeably higher than previous years of 6,500. And for it to be noticed here, probably like 8,000. But not everybody buys like a ticket, so I don't know how they keep track of that. Because you can just show up and see cool stuff if you want to.
I think the 8,000 and the 6,500 was the people who bought tickets.
Wow.
Different people who bought tickets for events and stuff like that. Like things that they could officially count.
Yep.
So there's probably even higher than that. But they don't track those, right? And you don't know how many people. But yes, today this podcast will be reflecting in a vacation slide manner, except on only audio, which makes it, I guess, better. Because actually, I'm much more likely to be interested in hearing people talk mm-hmm. about their vacations and pointing out all the cool stuff than showing pictures of things that they thought were cool. Because... when I hear it, I can imagine the coolest fucking thing in my head, but it never lives up to reality.
You like those dolphins jumping next to you? Yeah, they're like 3 feet away rather than like halfway across the bay. Those dolphins are like, you could pet the dolphins, even though I'm pretty sure that's like illegal everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So I think there's like a whole bunch of different ways that you can do Adepticon. I'm sure we'll talk about how we did Adepticon. But I don't think there's one set way of doing Adepticon. Like,
oh, for sure. I feel like in North America, this is the biggest overall miniatures gaming convention. This is the biggest thing. If you're into miniatures as a miniature gaming as a hobby, this is the biggest one. Now, actually, there has been another growing convention, the LVO, which we've never attended.
Yep.
That is now technically the biggest competitive miniature gaming convention in the world, actually, even bigger than the ones in the UK, which is kind of crazy. But that is a very specific and, in my opinion, small subset of the hobby gaming experience. But at the same time, that makes it even more epic because it's only a little bit smaller than Adepticon at this point. I think last time they were up to like 6,000 this year.
But it's mostly dedicated towards playing the games, versus Adepticon has like every single aspect of the hobby is represented there.
Not just playing the games, playing competitively.
Hmm. Oh yeah, because I guess we might as well talk about like what just in terms of like just playing games. There's not just one. Mm-hmm. You talked about the LVO Open, which is you play the tournament formats there, and you play with tons of people, and you play the best of the best, I guess, if you get to the top. But there's more than one.
You get sad, and you go to a slot machine, and get even more sad.
Hmm. That's not my thing, but I mean, it's probably a good way for some people who like tilt to really go on tilt. Anyhow.
Yeah.
But like, there's more than one way to play games.
Could you imagine? You go to LVO, and you make some bad decisions and lose your competitive game, and so you just continue to make even worse bad decisions. Fucking go into like thousands of dollars in debt. Oh my god, don't go on tilt in the LVO. I feel like it's dangerous, but yeah,
I'm sure someone's made that. I don't know if someone's made that. What's wrong with LVO? And that's their take.
I went to LVO and I like lost my house.
Yeah, they're like, you think there's something wrong with your convention? Check out how badly you can do at this convention.
Yeah. Anyways, Adepticon, you cannot do that. It's a much safer, more family-friendly convention.
Yeah, like, I guess just to start off with, like, there's way more than one way to play games there. And I think they really encourage playing games in ways other than just the standard tournament formats. Because one of the big things there is the duo formats that they encourage.
Yeah.
And they encourage people to just build dioramas around them. And then there's a whole event on Saturday night for looking at those dioramas. So duo events.
I think that's the most prestigious thing it doesn't seem like it's winning the doubles tournament, although I'm sure for a lot of people that is the highest, but the highest of the high is Armies on Parade, which is like after everyone's played, I think. I don't know. It's on the Saturday night. So I think it's after the duos tournament.
Well, because they have to select armies from the duos tournament.
Yep, and they put them in the main hall, and you see all of these beautiful display boards, which are some of them transcend display board and are like a full-on diorama that is bigger than one of them was more than 6x4 or at least a 6x4.
It was taller than most people, and it was way wider than anyone has ever existed. Yeah. It's over 8 feet wide. It was pretty epic.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. If you've already looked at the Adepticon, the Adepticon roundup, you'll probably see it because it was, I believe, the one that won, quote unquote, the Armies on Parade, because it got the top honors or something like that. We're talking about that board.
Yes, the one that was bigger than most people. But yeah, I think a lot of games have the duo tournament. We played in the Infinity one. There's, of course, Warhammer has it. Age of Sigmar has it. I think there was Battletech going on with Duo 2. We saw a Duo. No. So somebody just entered one?
No, there was a Battletech one.
Oh, okay. So somebody just put one out at the Armies on Parade?
No, that's just the diorama for Battletech.
Oh, okay.
That was, but there was a Duos for every single Atomic Mass game. So there was one for Shatterpoint, Marvel Crisis Protocol, and what's the other one? Legion.
Oh, nice. So they actually leaned into the whole Adepticon theme. That's cool to see.
Yeah, so this is one of the cool things with the new Adepticon, is that it used to be only, I think, for Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40,000. And then they just keep on expanding it out and letting the other decently sized games into that Armies on Parade. I think this is the first year that they had Infinity Armies be able to be there, which was very, very cool. Which will definitely hype up people and make people want to bring nicer diorama pieces for the other games, right?
What, because Infinity is so good looking, or are you just talking about the fact that they can get in? The fact that there's an entry, the fact that the entry exists.
Yeah, and there's some prestige, and you can show off those things at the very end with all of the nicest armies, right? And the great thing about these smaller skirmish games is that your diorama is relatively scaled. So if you create the equivalent of a 4x8 table that's 6 feet high for Age of Sigmar team, and Age of Sigmar teams are like 3 or 4 people too. So if you just do a duos for Infinity, the equivalent of that is a 2x2, I guess. A 2x2 that's 4 feet tall.
You don't have to make it that deep. Height is more important than depth, I would say, for diorama pieces. Height gives things like a pretty impressive presence.
Yeah, I said 4 feet tall.
Don't tempt me. Anyways, all right. So back on to the different ways of playing games at Adepticon, because that's almost like a whole other thing of the display stuff.
Yeah.
But so you've got the duo tournaments, which are heavily emphasized through like having lots of those end up on display. There's of course the tournaments,
the most prestigious, the first award,
obvious way. Duos. And there's a lot of narrative events, which are just
for sure.
People make up crazy missions that kind of link into each other, which I don't think we have done at any of the events. We were strongly considering a Frostgrave one in case we didn't get the events we wanted. But I think it lets games that have more of a narrative element shine that you might not play like at your local store and you want to play a whole bunch of games at once. Narrative is a good excuse to go and do that. So I think didn't do that, but I think it's something that would be worth doing at a future Adepticon.
And the other thing is games that you don't really have a community, which is another thing we did, right? Like if you cannot play those games locally, like for Infinity, we play that every week. But the other game we played was Arena Rex, and we don't really have an Arena Rex community. It's a little bit too small of a game to have a direct community, and it's a little bit too hard to get the miniatures. So going there and playing at that tournament was huge fun. But at the same time, you could do that for any of a whole bunch of other skirmish games, right? Especially now that skirmish games, a lot of great indie skirmish games are sold online and on YouTube, which means that they will not have store presence. Which means besides playing with your buddies, if you want a larger meta to play with, you have to go to something like a convention.
Yes, like maybe you don't want to play the game every all year, but if you have this one game you're enthusiastic about, there's probably going to be other people. The people who are enthusiastic about there are probably going to show it up at Adepticon and be like, we're gonna get in a couple rounds of this game. And you can see like people who like their projects that they're enthusiastic about go on the board.
Yep.
So yeah, there's the minor games. What other? There's also some weird homebrew stuff that I think often happens there for like. It's like, okay, this is a mainstream game, but someone just has a crazy idea about the game. And they're like, I'm going to run an event at Adepticon, which like I played in a tag deathmatch thing, which is basically you take the giant robots from Infinity and you use rules that are kind of like Infinity. And then you all just get in a giant brawl with your giant robot things. Mm-hmm. So that exists there. And I'm trying to think of something else that's similar to that. I think they also did something like that with the precursor for their like Gaslands-ish track game Rem Racers that people who aren't actually the company were just like, you know what would be cool? If you were race car drivers of like BattleBots in the Infinity world, and we'll make a game of this. And it's not official, but you can come join our unofficial game.
Yep.
So I'm sure there's lots of other like home brew takes on games where you just show up and you're like, bring this model and we'll play some crazy rules with it.
I played a kind of a little bit weird version of Blood Red Skies, which is a super good World War II aerial dogfighting game, and the key for this one was normally I think it's like 1 to 200 something scale or 144 maybe
for the planes,
and in this one it was
is 1 to 100 maybe.
The models were huge. They were so maybe it is 1 to 100. So normally they're 1 to 200, I think, something like that. So they're basically the things are like 2.5, and then with their bases being 1.5 inches or something like that. This one the bases were 6 inches and the planes were like 6 inches and we played them.
So these like model
honestly, the game didn't really work, but it was still fun. Yeah, but it was like you're playing with giant, giant it's plans, like, and you're like, you can try it out, right?
Bring out your giant toys that shouldn't really be in the game, but you know.
Yeah, so basically, that's exactly what it was. It's like, bring out your scale models, right, that normally are too big of a scale to play miniatures. And we're like, oh, we got a giant board. Let's try it out, see if it works.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work, in my opinion, but it was still fun.
So I guess you can even play games you, like you just said, you can play games you don't own either by just joining someone else's campaign. They're like, oh, yeah, you can borrow some of our miniatures. Or you can just play demo games, too. Like, well, you don't play the game, but hey, maybe you want to give it a try. I said I was going to give Shatterpoint a try, but then we started walking around the vendor's hall, and I'm like, I just want to keep walking around the vendor's hall and not go over there on the first day and do this demo game.
I did try a game, and we'll talk about it a little bit later when we go into detail of the different things we did. But
So, yeah, there's demos for almost every major game out there. Like, maybe you just show up to the booth and it's informal. Or some of the game systems are like, no, we'll book you a time in just so you don't, so you know you can get the game in.
Yep, a bunch of betas and things like that. And some games, you know, if you go there, especially because, you know, you're playing betas or new games, not saying this will always happen, but sometimes they can try to sweeten the deal and hook you in by giving you some, like, you know, fancy models, free models, to give you a taste, a more than a taste. You demo the game and then you bring back something, which is pretty cool.
Then when you build it, like, oh, I could do more of this, and then you're in.
Exactly.
So yeah, demo games are another way of playing. Any other way of playing games there we might have missed?
There's just ad hoc free-for-all. Oh. You just go upstairs and you just can see people, or if you see people just playing games and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you've got friends there, you know, and you're just like, it's after hours, there's open tables, you want to try out this game, I've got multiple armies.
Yep.
Or you just want to play your friends some more because you played a tournament earlier.
Yep.
Yeah.
Although, last time, we can talk about it later, more when we go through our adventure, but yes, there's a whole bunch of different things, some pretty cool terrain. Especially, I feel like if you're relatively new to the hobby, you will not have as cool tables as the tables that were out there. Like, for us, we're old hats at this, so we actually, when we play at home, we can have really cool terrain. And the only reason we don't play necessarily with giant, crazy terrain is just the effort of setting it up and tearing it down. But we could if we wanted to.
Yeah, like, oh, we've seen this before. Let's just play about the practical
terrain. And we have it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, do we have terrain that's reaching that level? Like, it's not the top level tables there. The top level tables there are purely epic. But we have, like, tier 2.
Bars are pretty nice.
Yeah, no, I'm like...
Oh, no, you're right. There are some that are really nice, you're right.
It's, like, top tier craziest shit on Earth.
Yeah,
and then we have, like, we have... That's, like, the A-plus terrain, and we just have A terrain. I mean, our terrain's only, like, A's.
Yeah, A plus. Yeah,
oh, fine, it's A+, not A++, right?
No. A++, I feel like that makes sense. Like, where not only does the terrain have a huge theme, but it is super well executed up to the highest thing. We're at the level, we have a lot of terrain where it's themed, and it's like a full table of themed terrain with varying heights, which is really nice to play on. And generally, the pinnacle you're going to have at home, right? Just because, like, most players, right? Most players will not have put in that much effort to get that much terrain. But, you know, at Adepticon, some of them are basically, like, show tables, right? Which is at one level up.
It's basically one big display piece that you play.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of the larger tournaments, like, if you go and see Games Workshop or Shatterpoint, they're still good, but you won't see as many show tables there because there's so many tables. They need so many tables. Mm-hmm. And almost like in terms of fairness, you can't have just one show table and then everyone else plays on like scattered terrain, right?
Yeah, and show tables are delicate too. Let's be real.
Yes.
Once you put lots of little gribbly things on them, it gets hurt. Like, I know some of the Infinity terrain gets hurt every year. It's sad.
For sure.
But
yeah, so... So yeah. So but still, if you're a relatively new player, you will not have built up that years of terrain, right? To have that nice fully themed tables. Generally you just have a bunch of scatter and mm-hmm. quick done stuff. And it's great to play there where they have people with nice terrain.
Yeah, anyways, play on different terrain. That's the aside. I don't know if it matters for something. It's a way different way of playing.
Oh,
the game.
It definitely matters.
You have different people's terrain you get to play on, not just your store stuff, not just your personal collection. Like you get a whole new experience that way.
For sure.
All right. So that's a lot of different ways of playing games that you can just do it adapt.
Yeah, this is a miniature gaming convention after all. But the other thing, so besides playing though, the crazy thing is, I think we talked about this before, it's not just playing. Which is the main thing. It is also commerce.
Oh, yeah. So we can talk about literally the scale of the convention hall. Like, you've got sort of half the hall is gaming tables, and then the other half of the hall is merch. And then there's another hotel for historicals, but we don't even need to talk about that at all. We can just forget about that and never talk.
It's not half the hall. There's the main hall.
Yep.
It's one third of the hall is merch.
Yes.
A little bit more than one third, but yeah.
Yeah. And there's other rooms too. We'll get into
that's what I'm saying, because there's the main hall, right? So the main hall, there's three sections. One hall is all commerce.
Yeah.
One hall is all Atomic Mass games, which was surprisingly not selling anything. And then one hall was Games Workshop with a store in the back. And then also in the hallway, so not the hall, the hallway in front of the other main hall, which
between all the halls, the hallway between the halls,
which is the other hall was like, I think it's the same size as the other hall. So it's right. There's another full hall of just games. And then in front of that, there's a hallway with a bunch of commerce there too.
Yes. So wherever you walk, the commerce.
So yeah. So technically gaming to like merch, it's like what, 1 to 5 or 1 to 6 or 1 to 7 or something like that. 1 to 8 maybe. But that's still a lot of merch because like we said, there's a lot of games.
Yeah. So to sort of briefly describe the merch you see there, I feel like it's not the same sort of merch you walk into your local game store and see, because obviously there's no point in them trying to compete. Like, this is people trying to showcase their new stuff. This is small distributors basically using this as advertising. This is like main game makers just trying to show off their like product with demos and like the newest cool stuff to get people into the game. It's not, it's
stuff
commerce.
You sell direct. Yeah.
It's commerce, but it's not like stacks of boxes in a warehouse style. It's more like a showcase feel to it, I would say.
Yes. I think it's basic. It's like, I don't know if you've ever gone to Gen Con. It's exactly like that. Everyone has their newest, coolest stuff, special con stuff, and you have a lot of merchants who are selling things you basically cannot get except for online, right? And some of them are even hard to get, especially because, you know, shipping has gone up a lot. So you can basically just pay it without shipping, right, when you go there. Not only are you seeing their newest, latest, greatest stuff and possibly some con exclusives, you also get to see stuff that you didn't even know existed. So you wouldn't even be able to find it online, because until you've gone to that con, you're like, oh, this game, that's interesting. And then, so that is a huge experience. I think we talked about it last time. But again, it's great fun. I felt like you could basically spend probably 4 hours just walking through. And I think I did spend 4 hours, more than 4 hours, and it wasn't enough to see everything.
Yeah, I felt like you had to break it up. It just became overwhelming at some point.
Yeah, you could spend a full day probably just looking at all of the stores.
Yeah, like you should break it up. Well, we talk later about how to do Adepticon. Like, the first thing you want to do is go through the vendors hall, just so you don't feel like, so you don't feel the sense of FOMO. Yes. It's like, oh man, this thing might sell out, which things do sell out there, because we said people don't bring heaps of boxes. It's not about that. It's about showcasing stuff in the display cabinets, and obviously they want to sell some stuff to recoup
the
costs.
And if it's new stuff, if it's new stuff, they won't necessarily have manufactured all of their stuff, and they're not going to bring all their stuff. They're going to bring what's practical and what they could have made at that point.
Yeah, and then hand you out like flyers for come to our web store, because otherwise you may never have seen them. But I'm trying to think of things that are different there. Like obviously we talked about already with those blackout games and smaller like indie games. They have their products on sale there, and you get to see their products in person versus like, okay, you see something, the pictures they've taken, their website, you're like, I don't know, is this mini actually this good? Is this the painter just like bringing this up a notch? Or maybe their painter's like shit the bed and the mini's actually way better than you think it is. Or the photography isn't so great. Sometimes you see things in person, you're like, damn, that's actually nice. Versus you see it and you're like, you know, the painter kind of just like slopped on something. You don't know how.
And when you see these vendors with their actual like models in their display cases, sometimes not even display cases, you can like literally pick up the model depending if they have like demo tables and stuff. So you can really get a good look all the way around, which is, you just cannot do online.
No, it's totally different seeing miniatures in person. Like we'll talk later about the whole competition and like high quality painting you see. But just in terms of like your experience of like, do I think these miniatures are cool? Yeah. I don't know. But you can walk like right up to them. They're in the display cases. You definitely can actually really see the games or the product quality yourself there.
And you can also often, if it's a game that you're buying, not just a pretty miniature, you can also often talk to people who made the game. So you can go up and be like, you know, tell me more about this game and, you know, what's so awesome about it, why I need to buy it.
Yeah, you don't have to go on.
But be warned, after you talk to that guy, there's a very good chance you will be like, I need to buy it.
Now you have a personal connection to the makers of the game. Yeah. I know, because like the makers of the game are there so often in their own booths, because you know it's their baby, they're there. And like if you for some reason have some questions about the game, don't make them weird, but you can actually ask the people. even the people just like it's whoever true. Else is. You can even
Please
talk to people who
weird,
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the people who are in the booth are probably fans of the game. So unlike going on a forum on the internet, which is basically mostly trolls and other people covered in weird forms of slime you don't want to know behind their keyboards, you can talk to like the real people who are into the game and get like answers to the question tailored to you versus having some weird back and forth conversation on a forum. So
yeah, for sure. So many good things about doing it, and it's just fun. It's just fun walking around in a real place with all these different minis with all this cool stuff. Even the normal retailers being able to just do normal retailing in person. Like there's a lot of online retailers that you might want to look for something maybe that is hard to find, and they bring that stuff there. Like I bought a bunch of Infinity miniatures at the con that are just hard to get. And I specifically for Infinity, I want the newer ones. So because they changed the stuff, the materials that they made them out of. So that you only know that when you're buying an older kit, if you look at the box in person, and they're never going to list that online, right? Because that's almost incidental. Right. So I had to do that. And that was great seeing a whole bunch of things. So.
Yep. The other thing, like we're less into this, but there's a whole lot of larger scale miniatures that end up sold there that you'd have to go buy from like niche stores online. Yep. I mean, you can do it, but just those larger scale,
talking
about like 75.
Is often so expensive.
Yeah. Like if you tried to get we're talking about like 75 millimeter scale miniatures, busts, things like that, where the shipping costs will be close to the cost of the miniature. So you feel nuts kind of ordering them. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to comment on painting those isn't our thing, but I'm not against it. It's just a time thing. Like it's a time thing. Like it's a different hobby.
Yeah. And the only thing with that one is 3D printing 75 millimeter is like basically ideal, unless your 75 is like a dragon, in which case it's like a giant mini that doesn't fit on your build plate. But if you do have a 3D printer, I feel like that is going to start pushing out 75 millimeter purchasing.
Yeah.
Because you just buy the STL and then print it at home, especially also, if you're into such a huge niche hobby.
Yeah, it's also doing a print versus printing an army, or just you got to keep doing it over and over versus you do one thing or your friend does the one thing for you in your group that has it. But yeah, there's the makers of those miniatures. Also, there's people who sell STLs there. They're like, yeah, here's our flyer for where to get the STLs. But if you want to see like a printout of this thing, like you could buy the expensive one that we printed, or you could just come down with the STL now that you've seen it and you can have it. There's that was showing up a whole bunch at the convention too.
And to be fair, 3D printing is not free. Like there's a lot of effort that goes into actually getting it print out. And there's a lot of like safety precautions you have to do, which means you have to be more aware than just, you know, going la-di-da. So there is definitely value in even buying a 75 millimeter model than just printing it yourself. So I'm not saying there's no value. I'm just saying for a lot of people, that value will be reduced compared to where it was 5 years ago before we had 3D printing.
Yeah, if you only paint like two of these things a year, like you're probably not going to justify having a 3D printer for doing two miniatures a year. So, yeah, those miniatures.
Depends on how expensive those miniatures are.
Oh, you haven't even got to learn the whole freaking 3D printing process just to even get going at that. That's going to take you.
That's true. Technically, you print out two miniatures technically, but you probably did print out six or seven to make it work.
Seven failures, And these takes a lot of resin to fail those. Well, you can learn at small scales, but your failures are now failing with a lot of resin. Not with a little 28 millimeter failure. You know, like,
technically, there's different types of failures you get for larger models too. So
great! Wow, that's Anyhow, you get to see those miniatures in person there too, which you're not gonna see at the game stores for bigger stuff. Ooh, other weird things. There's lots of interesting different paint lines there too. Honestly,
there's so much. Basically, like we said before, Adepticon. If you are into all of these different things, we have reaffirmed, you know, this is the second time we've gone. It's all there, right? It really is, as of right now, I feel like the miniature gaming mecca con, right? You should go there, check it out. The one biggest issue is, in my opinion, having gone before we just switch over and start talking about our specific journeys, is...
There's one more entire thing that goes on there, but we'll get to that before we move on.
Is they separated the historicals from the other stuff, especially the commerce and the all the other main other non-historical games. And actually there was a bunch of even non-historical things in the other con, and because there was a separation, I felt like the alternative place was a lot more sedate. It didn't have the same hustle and bustle that you would want, right? Yeah. It didn't have the same feeling.
Yeah, that might be okay, though, to have like a longer, more relaxed events at the other hotel.
There was Middle Earth and Song of Ice and Fire was there, right? And I feel like...
It's honestly difficult to go back and forth.
Oh, Saga was also there.
Yep.
And I feel like it really prevents those games from getting the same kind of feeling, promotion that they get from the main hall, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You can't just pop... Like, I went over there because, you know, I had a couple of events. Like I said, Blood Red Skies thing. But for the cross-promotion that you would actually want, I feel like it's not ideal, in my opinion.
Yeah, we were in the hotel right next to it, and I never went there. Like, we could have just walked for less than 5 minutes, and I could have been in there and seeing it, but didn't even do it.
And also, there was a shuttle bus, but the shuttle bus didn't go enough.
It didn't go directly
there,
did it?
It was like every 20 minutes
or
something like that, which is, you know, it's fine, but... To make it feel like it's the same convention, you need to have a constant shuttle bus that you wait 5 minutes, you can be in the other stop, or 10 minutes max, right?
Or there's always a shuttle bus waiting out front. You go and you sit down.
Yes. And
maybe it doesn't leave all the time, but there was always a shuttle bus sitting there.
Yes.
Psychologically.
That way it feels like one single con, right? But the way it was now, it definitely felt like a separate kind of thing. You go there, you take a look, you walk around a bit, and then you go. And there's no, there's one store basically only in the other con, so it doesn't even feel like the same, right? I feel like the historical portion of Adepticon, I feel like there's bigger historical conventions out there.
Yeah.
If it, for historical minis, so. Just didn't work, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, so the
historical and the last thing. Yeah.
Do you know? Do you know what it is?
Yeah, I know what you're going to Yeah, of course.
It's the painting.
Yeah.
So, if you like doing painting, there's like an entire different ways of just experiencing Adepticon through painting. That there's painting tables going on there nonstop, whether it's for you to sit down and paint, which those seem to be full all the time. But I think it was just like the sphere of online, maybe not online, but the whole sphere of people who paint for competitions who will just show up there super early in the morning to get themselves a spot. It's just so they can socialize with each other. And if you want it, like if they have fans, their fans can show up and talk to them there while they're just sort of chilling and painting. There's also painting classes going on like here, there, and everywhere. Like you walk through the part with the tournament tables, and there's just sort of like a row of painting tables where people are teaching a class, like just at the edge of the tournament scene. There's rooms upstairs, which we may not necessarily have gone into to see all the painting classes going on in there. So there's just like nonstop.
There was a BattleTech painting row in the BattleTech gaming section where it's just like, I don't know if you're supposed to, you have to sign up for it, but they're teaching a whole bunch of new BattleTech players, right? Because BattleTech is so easy to get into now. Like, it's great that they had that right there teaching a whole bunch of new BattleTech players how to paint.
Yeah, because BattleTech has less of a painting scene behind it, but they're like, huh, you can do it.
Yep. So,
yeah, like, I think there's
a free paint and take section. Sponsored, I think, by Reaper. I think it was sponsored by Reaper. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also fun to do. But, like, there's lots of competition painters and other YouTuber painters who, if you're a fan of them, you can be like, hey, I'll show up, do a class with this guy. Maybe you want to paint like that guy, he can give you feedback, where you can see, often they'll bring their own display works there to sort of, you can see them in person, which, as we said, is totally different seeing these things in person than just looking at online pictures of minis. So, like, you could experience Adepticon just as a painter, I think.
Yeah, and not just, you know, their display pieces that they're showing you if you go to a thing. There is one big competition, the Golden Demon, that has an entire section upstairs, annoyingly right next to squeaky escalators. But there was all of these top painters coming to try to enter it, because I think that's the biggest Golden Demon in North America.
Yeah, North America.
And I think there was something about there not even being a Golden Demon UK this year or something like that.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, so, you know, you see all these people from all over. I think there people from outside of North America came to enter into this competition. And Golden Demon is just GW Games, so we don't even see our favorite minis in this case, but it was amazing to see.
No, you still spend at least an hour just looking at these cases, even if you're not a GW player. Just because people who are probably, they're probably not GW, there's probably a lot of non-GW players who are just like, okay, this is like a pinnacle event for painters. I want to be part of this. So you see just like
absolutely. So they'll literally buy GW models just to enter this event.
Yeah, which, that's cool. Like, it'd be nice if there was a wider painting thing, but it brings people together to do painting. And honestly, with GW, they have such a range of miniatures out there now at this point that any painter could find something in their range. Like, there's so much stuff out there that somebody's going to find something in the range they want to paint. And maybe they're not going to use the themes of GW. They probably won't win if they don't go with GW's themes, but people will still be impressed by what you can create there.
For sure. And it's not, although Golden Demon is by far the biggest competition, the Atomic Mass Games still had a competition.
Yep.
Infinity did not, but Privateer Press had one too. And Creature Caster had one with Conquest, Last Argument of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I think those were, so there's like four different painting contests on right now, depending on the models you do. There's no, unfortunately, open painting competition
mm-hmm.
where you can just paint whatever you want, like there is in Gen Con or in any of the dedicated miniature painting conventions we've gone to. But there's a lot of different painting competitions you can enter for painting gaming minis.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how you'd figure it out. Often, like, if you go to Adepticon's website, they'll post news, which I think is the way you figure out who's running painting competitions there. Because it's not actually an event you join. It's just, you don't have to buy tickets for it like many events at Adepticon. You just go see the news of who's doing these painting events. That's just sort of fun to, like, you know, putting something in the case. Well, I feel like you have to do it pretty good justice to put it in the case, because everybody's going to see it. You don't want to detract from, like, the quality of stuff there, but
yeah.
It gives you a reason to, like, okay, I'm going to do a really good painting project for this thing, or I've got this diorama idea. It's kind of like an extra boost to wanting to do, like, your creative project, just knowing that there's a place to showcase it. So we've done those things before. I don't know if I'm willing to do, like, a single. I'd probably do it again, honestly.
Yeah.
We just didn't do it this year.
Yeah, for sure. So there is a whole painting thing outside of the main display competition of Armies on Parade.
Yeah.
For people who want to paint single or miniatures. So
yeah,
it's quite cool.
So yeah, there's totally loads of stuff for painters to do. That's just another entire way of experiencing Adepticon.
Like we said, Adepticon, anything you are interested in the hobby for, you can do it at Adepticon, and all of them at the same time. Although the only limit really is how much time you have, right? Because you can only schedule one event at a time. Maybe your event that you wanted to go to is conflicting with another event you wanted to go to, like what happened with us for Usgrave.
Oh, the whole other thing, like, companies put on seminars as well there. Like, they'll do release preview things, like Games Workshop does it there, Corvus Belli does it there. I don't know, did Catalyst Labs do any sort of announcements there? They had loads of film equipment out.
So they were definitely
they were filming loads of media content in the Catalyst booth.
I don't really look at the new stuff for Catalyst Games Labs, because there's so much stuff already out there, and their game hasn't changed for like 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
So like there's, to even catch up to where they are right now in terms of content, I'd have to play Battletech like hardcore for 10 years or at least 5 years before I'd be like, okay, so what's new?
Yeah, but for the enthusiasts, they want to be there before
who have done that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like before the content hits YouTube and their website, you're there for it.
Yes.
Because you're their biggest fans.
You can ask the questions about what's coming out next.
Yeah.
I have no idea what else they could release. Like, they have everything.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there already there's a Battletech RPG. I guess they could re-release the Battletech RPG. I think it maybe is not in print right now.
Yeah,
but yeah, I have no idea what new could happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
So yes, that's a side way of experiencing it. Just some news and preview things you're there.
Oh, you know what would be cool? I'm just thinking for Battletech. Because there was the video game that just completed, if they had campaigns with story RPG campaigns that you could play through.
Narrative events? That sounds like something they probably have.
No, narrative books. I'm just thinking about new products that I don't think they have. Narrative books where it's like you're playing and then you, I'm pretty sure this campaign play, but where you're playing, but you also have like a story that's going on and you try to follow the story, because basically it's a historical game, right? They have this history and then you can play through campaigns, so they're kind of already have that, but like the way that you play it in a video game, the way that Frostgrave has campaign books but for Battletech. Honestly, every game should have campaign books like Frostgrave has campaign books, but
especially if it's like a super simple game, then
not Battletech.
And like Infinity's about like your tactical decisions on the board. You're like, I teched this was hidden, I dropped this in. Like sometimes if the game's all about your like massive strategy on the board, you don't need it. But if there's bringing your miniatures to the board because they look cool and they do a thing here or there, you're like, why are they standing?
To survive.
Yeah, it's like, but if you want to give them a reason for why they're pushing the button or standing in the zone, you can link it to something wider than you feel like it's more impactful. Yeah, that's a whole other topic though.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I just had to throw in love for Frostgrave, even though we didn't play any Frostgrave this convention.
But we strongly considered. All right. But what did we do?
All right. Well, we went from Thursday and then we left early Sunday. So we didn't go the full Sunday.
But honestly, a lot of people seem to leave on Sunday because the parking lot actually starts opening up and you could park there.
Ooh.
On Saturday, yeah, Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, the Sunday guys are the guys who are like sticking in there for all of the big tournaments and stuff like that. But Thursday was really, really fun. We got it. Oh, we had some troubles with we actually got in Wednesday night a little bit later than normal because of some troubles we experienced. Brandon, if you want to talk about it, you can, but I'll leave it at that.
Everything's fine. Nothing went wrong. Nothing was overlooked. Everything was all in order. Right.
Okay, sure. So we got in a bit late on Wednesday night. I really enjoyed getting there the day before, so you can start on Thursday fresh.
You wake up fresh that morning. Yeah,
exactly. So no drinking or whatever. Actually, we didn't really drink at all. I drank like one drink, I think, throughout the entire trip.
There's different ways of experiencing Adepticon. Like a lot of people experience Adepticon drunk from the morning to drunk at night, and they look like they're having fun until they get too wasted to continue.
Yes, remember, all day. This convention is, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. If it's just those 3 days, it's 3 days. We're too old to be able to drink hardcore for 3 days straight. So instead, we did the opposite, and we reduced drinking to almost or actually zero. And honestly, it was fun. It was great doing that.
Yeah, I'm getting tons of sleep. Like, we got 9 hours of sleep one day, but that's after doing like just going running around all day. So there's different ways to do that. We did Adepticon the well-rested, well-fed, not wasted way. There is the other wasted way of doing Adepticon, which I think people can have a lot of fun doing that.
No, it was like, pretty fun. Like last year, I drank one day. I drank a lot, and it was fun. So we got in late, got a full 9 hours of sleep, and we drove there, right? So it was a bit rough, but you know, after that, after getting 9 hours of sleep, it was fine.
Yep.
And we woke up fresh face. What's the first thing we did? We followed all the advice we talked about. We went and spent most of the time looking for things to buy.
We went to the vendors hall right away because honestly, that's where all the crazy shit. Like, you've seen other games before, but the vendors hall is like the new shiny. So you want to just run right to the new shiny. I think other years we've gone to conventions, we booked like a tournament for the first day, and then I think the second day I booked things. I'm talking about Gen Con here, where it took to like day three before I got to look at the hall. That wasn't cool.
Of the stuff was sold out by then.
Yeah. So I would say what we did is we went to the hall right away. I was, like I said before, I booked a Shatterpoint demo, not for a specific time frame, so it's not like I skipped out on something. But it's like, you could do one this day. We have room for you if you...
No time. You got to buy.
No, I'm like, no, I got to see more of the hall. There's all this cool shit.
Exactly. So. Actually, one thing I forgot to admit that I missed is I picked up my swag bag. And one thing with Adepticon is that you can buy a $60 to $100 Canadian swag bag. I don't remember what the cost is. Something like that. And it is filled with swag from all the different companies that are there. So I got a full Vanguard, like Age of Sigmar Vanguard army box, which is already more expensive than the swag bag that I purchased. Then I got a whole bunch of... Shatterpoint, like Atomic Mass game stuff. I got a Luke Skywalker, which I will probably eventually paint, honestly, because I'm just getting back into Star Wars. I don't know why. I guess the distaste of the recent movies and media has washed from my tongue. So I'm starting to like Star Wars again. And then a whole bunch of other smaller little pieces in there from cool stuff. There's pirates from Blood and Plunder, which I am going to be painting this year.
Which you so kind of needed. Just, you're like, oh, I was going to buy these anyways. Oh my God, it came this way.
I didn't need it, but I have a lot of pirates already.
But you were considering buying them.
So. I was considering buying more, of course. You know, more pirates, more better, right? So, but I got more pirates there too. So like, there's just.
That swag bag was very impressive. Yeah, yes. I will say that. If compared to the previous year's one, the previous year one was like, eh. This year's swag bag was just insane.
Yes, there was an entire boxed game from the guys who do Flames of War for their new tank battle game, which is slightly post-World War II. It's alternative history, post-World War II, pre-Korean, that we literally had to look up because the box doesn't say anything about it.
Doesn't explain what you're supposed to do with these things.
Yeah. Like, and why there's a bunch of random tanks from after World War II to like a little bit through Korean War. And you're like, is this, are we playing Korean? Like, I didn't understand it.
Is this Korea? Is this the Cold War? What's hot? What is this?
Yeah. The idea is the Cold War immediately is a hot war, but tanks and they don't use nukes.
And there's no people. People don't go to the tanks.
Yeah, it's just tanks. Yeah. So, yeah. But there's an entire starter box that is a complete game. And I was like, okay, if I was into this, so I would, that would be amazing as well. Right. So just that swag bag, if you are a, what do you call it? Polygamous gamer.
Dabbler in games.
If you're a dabbler, this is amazing. And if you just like painting random different miniatures from all sorts of different things, this is a great deal. You should definitely get it. This is my second year of getting it. Not disappointed. It also makes your swag picture that you take at the end to send to all your friends look huge, because it is huge, because they give you so much stuff.
So on that note, if you're going to get the swag bag, you need to have driven to Adepticon Your luggage will not carry this thing back. I mean, previous Adepticons, we know people who have flown there, and like, could you bring our swag bag back to our city? Yes. I'm like, yeah, okay, we drove here, no problem. But they're like, I don't know what to do with this thing now. So on that note.
It's true. You're going to have to pay the extra luggage just to bring it back. Yeah.
Yeah. I know people talk about their Adepticon experience. They're like, oh, I flew there, so I couldn't buy all the stuff I wanted. It's like, well, there's pros and cons to that
one. Bad planning. That was bad planning.
You got to send some of your friends there to drive across the whole, possibly, of the United States with a car, and you fly. And
or like, you can fly there and then drive back.
With somebody else?
What? Either with somebody else or rent a car. Drive back.
Yeah, okay, that's going to cost more to Adepticon to get the car returned.
No, you don't. You can have, like, there's international, well, there is international, like Canada and U.S., but there's, like, you know, budget and stuff. I'm pretty sure you can drop them off in a different city.
That's money to do that. They want money. Sure.
There's also money to have a flight, unless you have your own airplane and you, I don't know, you pee gas or something. So you're paying either way, right?
Yes.
You could technically just put it into a box. Sorry, go to the mail store and just mail it to you.
Ship all your stuff back to yourself.
Ship all your stuff back. It's just going to be another $50-$100 or something like that.
Yeah.
To be fair, the swag bag is like hundreds of dollars worth of stuff. They're not joking when they say that.
Yeah. So that's part of experiencing Adepticon, is what you do with all your stuff.
Yes.
So yes.
All right.
So what we did Vendor's Hall first. Did we go crazy the first day buying stuff? No.
Well,
we
bought. I did.
Oh, you did? Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So previously I had purchased some cool miniatures from Relic Blade, and then I wanted to buy more of it. Like, I only bought the miniatures, right? But I wanted to buy more of it, but the shipping is kind of expensive, right? So this time I went and basically bought the rule book, which is often being sold out, the remainder of the faction that I purchased, and an entire other faction. So that's Relic Blade is a indie game, a great looking indie game, very, very stylistic and cartoony, played on a 2x2 board. And it just looks fun. And I've heard so many people online say that this game is so great. So, of course, I had to buy in like every other game that people say is great.
Yeah, we saw previous years lots of people playing Relic Blade and they look like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
The boards were extremely impressive.
Oh yeah, that's one of the boards that we're talking about, like A plus boards, where you're like, wow, this is just a display board that you're playing on. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's only 2x2, so people can actually kind of bring it in their car to Adepticon and be like, yo, you want to play on my board? And it's like, damn, that's cool.
It's very, very cool. So, because of that, I bought a whole bunch of cool stuff, and the creator, I think it's Sean Stutter, he apparently, if you buy the rule book at the con, and maybe online, I don't know, but if you buy the rule book at the con, he draws a picture in the beginning of your rule book.
If he has time, there's not a giant lineup. Or even if there's kind of a giant lineup, he's just like,
there was kind of a decent line when we lined up, and he drew a picture for everyone who bought the main rule book. I don't know what happens if you buy 3 rule books at one time. Maybe he only draws it once.
He just signs it. But, he draws a circle.
Yeah. But he drew a really cool piece that was a character from one of the models that I bought, right? In the beginning. So this is like extra care. And this is a guy that does everything. He does the art. He does the rule books. He sculpts the models.
Oh, yep.
This is a one-man band. He does everything. And that's why he like literally draws that picture in the beginning of the rule book. Like, I get it, because instantly when he did that, I'm like, oh, even if I hate this game, if it turns out that I hate this game, I still love this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, this game can have terrible rules, but I still appreciate it.
I'm pretty sure that's not true. Like, when we end up playing it, I'm pretty sure it's going to be super fun, because I've never heard anyone say it's a bad game. But even if it was, he would have won me over there.
So, I did buy stuff the first day as well. I bought stuff for Arena Rex, because I had to borrow your Arena Rex armies in previous years, because I didn't have enough guys. And I bought a few guys last year, but I realized it wasn't enough. So like, oh, okay, I'll finish off the army, but I get them the first day before they sell out. So that's the stuff I bought the first day.
Yeah, I ended up going back and buying a couple more guys from Arena Rex, but that's another day. I think, what else did I buy? I bought a bunch of other stuff too. Oh, I picked up the limited edition Games Workshop model for one of our locals, just as a secret shopper.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Infinity.
We did buy exclusives for Infinity, because just like you said with Games Workshop, they bring exclusives. You're like, oh my god, I gotta buy this exclusive that I can only buy here. And your friends back home were like, I need that. Corvus Belli did the same thing for their Infinity game. We're like, oh, we have to buy these exclusives for ourselves and for our friends.
And now in the game, that model that is they have exclusive version for is usable in so many different armies, and it's really, really good, like, list filler. Yep. So
had it's to a nice match too. Like,
yeah. Well, I actually, this is one of those things we're talking about, where I saw the model online and I was like, I'll pass.
Yeah.
And then for the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, yep.
I saw it online. I didn't like it online. But when I saw it in person, I was like, no, I need to buy this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I thought the online gave a decent impression of it. The other thing the other thing is you get to see sometimes people bring the studio, like, photographed armies and put them in their display case, and you're just like, oh my god, I get to see the actual studio painted, pro painted army I see online in person. Because like, back to Arena Rex, they have the pro painted stuff in their case. Infinity for their game, they bring the studio paint jobs there off to and put them in the case. You're like, damn.
Warcrow, you hadn't really looked at them before up close. Did you ever see them in person? I guess you weren't at Gen Con last year.
No, I wasn't there for the first
preview. So you hadn't seen them in person, and the first thing you commented when you saw them was like, wow, these are actually really nice.
Oh, I thought they were nice for the pictures online, but the paint jobs in person were like, they found a top-tier painter, just like the freehand on it, just everything about their paint jobs on the actual models. You can't always tell from pictures, but like,
they look really good. That's actually what sold me in Gen Con, is seeing them in person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing them in person again today, and they even had extra minis because they were running demos, and the extra minis were painted well too. Like, oftentimes for certain companies, the extra painted miniatures are not quite painted as well. Mantic.
Yeah, they could up the game there.
It's surprising. Like, So Mantic has this new Halo game, and I don't really like it because it's heroic scale. Mm-hmm. Guys' heads are too big. And I don't really like Halo. But I was surprised that they had a couple of, like, nicely painted Halo minis in that case. But they had a lot of really...
Yeah, the ones they had...
Beginner painter level minis.
Yeah,
where I'm like, I could have probably painted better than this in an hour.
Yeah, I could easily speed paint. There's plenty of speed painters who can do something better than an hour. It looked like somebody slapped on some contrast paints and they called it a day. They just like dunked it in the contrast paint. We're like, it's red.
I felt like it Enjoy. Was even a little bit.
It wasn't even as good as contrast paint. It could have dipped. Yeah.
Maybe I haven't used it contrast paints for a while there. I feel like you can get to a higher level faster. But again, it's just surprising, like, that, you know, they could have, the miniatures are not for me because they're heroic, but I feel like when you're trying to sell it in this convention, when you have such a major property that, although not me, a lot of people have a very tight connection to because they grew up playing that video game, I don't know why they wouldn't put a better foot forward. Like, having a couple of models to saying, this is what it looks like for the beginner, but this is what it looks like when you're a good painter, like a professional painter, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that the ratio should be the opposite of what they had. Their ratio was they had a couple of expert painters, which did look good, honestly. They looked great. And then they had a majority of beginner or newer painter models painted, or maybe you could say rush painted. I don't know what the context of these were. But if they had reversed them, where most of them are professionally painted, and then you have a couple of ones you're saying, like, hey, this is what it'll look like if you actually buy it, because, you know, the majority of people who buy it are going to be beginner or newer painters, right? They're not going to have, like, 20 years of experience like us, right? So it makes sense to have that as the reverse. So you sell people, and then you give them a realistic expectation afterwards.
Yep.
Then the other way around, where you turn people, you can also turn people off, especially because all the other companies do the opposite, where most of the things are professionally painted. So you're looking at these models that are, you know, really at, like, normal paint jobs, or you could say, you know, beginner or whatever paint jobs, and you unintentionally compare them to professional paint jobs because every other company is just showing professional paint jobs.
Yeah.
I think it was a real big mistake.
Yeah, like, they upped their game on the quality of miniatures for this.
That's true.
Like, they're way more detailed, they're way better proportion, the armor fits together probably because they just have the video game thing to be like, I just have to copy this. They're not fully creating all the art.
They definitely changed it, though, because they made it more heroic scale, which was annoying.
Yeah, they did.
I wish they had just ripped the 3D models.
Mm-hmm.
It would look a lot better.
Yeah. Anyhow, so we got to see that game. First day, I think I played in, like, one of those made-up game robot deathmatch things for the tags in Infinity. I played that on the first day, which is a very light game to play. You don't feel like you've got to concentrate and, like, you need to know all your rules. You're like, we just told you the rules on this piece of paper when you showed up. Just have some fun. So, nice light game on the first day.
Yep. I personally tried out a robot game called Zeogenesis. This is a game with tag size, so like 55mm based robots fighting each other. So dreadnought size.
Bigger than BattleTalk, like a bunch of dreadnought size things fighting each other.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be. I think it's supposed to be a 28mm scale game. It is a 28mm scale game, but people are fighting in dreadnoughts basically.
Okay.
And it was created by Gav Thorpe with help from Andy Chambers. And so I actually, Gav Thorpe gave me the demo.
Wow.
The game is actually really, really fun, actually. I was really impressed from the game. It felt very dynamic. It was it felt like it was more inspired from anime than it was from, you know, Warhammer or BattleTech and stuff like that, right? So that it had a very Infinity kind of dynamic feel, but it didn't play like Infinity, right?
Yeah, I took a look at this quick start sheet that they gave you guys, and the rules looked like they were pretty, like, cleanly laid out. Is that the right impression?
Yep. And there was back and forth. Like, there's definitely some special things for the game, but there's huge back and forth because you basically, it's almost like like more like a Warcrow kind of system where when you charge someone, if they have a reaction,
we might as well not reference Warcrow because Warcrow isn't even out yet. That's a future thing to talk about in this podcast. What game is it like then? What game is it like?
It's kind of like Infinity and like with reactions and stuff like that, but not like it has that feeling, but it's more like it's inspired from the same thing than the game is inspired. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're both inspired from anime, so they have that both kind of reaction, action, reaction thing. One of the craziest things that works really well in the game that felt really dynamic is if you charge a guy, you can always get a reaction, right? One of the reactions, or you shoot a guy, is to duck, which means you just get a free movement. So if they move out and try to shoot you, you can react to duck into cover and not get shot at all.
Oh, you rush them, they run away, and you don't overcommit. Because you're like, clearly you're running away.
So you
run at them, they run away, and you get the choice of not just being like sitting out there in the wind.
No. Yeah, the entire point is that they can run away. You can't just pop out. Away. It's not like a Rochambeau where they just pop out, shoot you, and then you pop out and shoot them back.
Oh, they pop out, shoot you, and you can run away.
You can duck.
See them pop out, you see them pop out before they actually do the shooting. You're like, no, I don't want to be here for this.
Yes. Otherwise, you want to pop out, and then if they don't run away, they're going to try and duck so that they can shoot you before you can run away kind of thing, right? All right. Maybe they can still run away if they try and do that. But the whole point is that you need to out – what that basically means is that movement is king, right? Yeah. If you can just dodge out of the way or dodge out of range, right, because there are certain guns that have ranges, right? That means that a lot of it is basically you're dodging around to get a good bead, and you basically, you know, had to wear the person down, right?
And hit
him one
use...
side and then have another guy –
You have to use maneuvering to get the guy locked down. You can't just, you don't just walk out, shoot, and just, I shoot you, you shoot me, I shoot you, you shoot me. You've got to outmaneuver them first to get the shooting going. It's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it's a very cool kind of dynamic kind of gameplay. The robots kind of wear down as well, which is fun. So honestly, the game is very interesting. The biggest.
Is it miniature agnostic? Do they try and sell you their own miniatures?
They have their own miniature line. So a lot of, like, that's the biggest possible issue is that their art actually is nice. I do like their art. It's very much anime-styled robots, right?
Zeogenesis.
Yeah. Yeah. But they did have the actual sculpts. And
oh, you bought one.
They did. No. It's for playing the demo. They gave us 3D printed one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but at the same time, they said the game is not going to be 3D printed. It's going to be actually hard plastics, right? Which can be fun with a mech that size. The only worry is these. I feel like this, even though the art is really nice, I feel like the sculpts are not the same quality as the art.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit worse, and they're not close to the quality of Infinity, which is an issue to me, right? Because like if I want a big tag size robot, I can just I'm buying a whole bunch of tags, right? Yeah. Like if this was just a rule book, this would be an instant buy for me.
Yeah, right? If you just had robots on 2-inch bases, you weren't playing with little battle tech stuff, you're playing with a bit bigger stuff, it gives more opportunity for painting.
Yeah. And then I just purchased a whole bunch of robots from whatever kind of thing I wanted, right?
And you can play with your terrain from that scale. You're like, oh well, I can just use my 28 millimeter terrain with this stuff.
Yep. With playing a whole bunch of tags mixed with like dreadnoughts mixed with whatever, this would probably be this. The rule book, like the gameplay, like I said, was really fun, very interesting, very dynamic, more dynamic than most games that you play, right? And so I really, but at the same time, the models didn't really sing to me. So I'll have to see if the actual production models can win me over.
Well, that's a good thing about having demos at these places. You're like, well, now I know, like, how do I really feel about this game? Because you played it. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't as interested going into it. It was just because, you know, Andy Chambers, Gav Thor, it was mostly Andy Chambers. Andy Chambers made a lot of games that I really enjoyed. But this is Gavthorpe's game, and it was great.
Yeah, so, okay. So that was our Thursday. Off to him.
Yeah.
So Friday.
Friday is when we played the doubles tournament. So again, we had a good night's sleep. I think we had longer sleep that day, didn't we? No.
Did we? No, we had to wake up really early and get there really early.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
It was like an 8 a.m. start.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. So we had a lot of sleep the day before, so but we still went to bed at a reasonable time, so it wasn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although 8 a.m. start, I'm glad it started at 8 because it took them like an hour and something for the actual games to start. Just
you
because
all
of
punched in and whatever.
Yeah,
mix-ups.
Info punched in and everything. I understand why you need to get in early, but in some ways it's like, why did we get here at 8 when we didn't start for another hour or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was more fun than last year.
It was.
Yeah, it was like there's a lot of things going in to make it more fun. First of all, we brought armies that we had never played before.
I played mine before. Once, but not in combination.
I was going to play a tournament mm-hmm. with Bakunin, but then I hurt my leg and I wanted to leave it off for the actual game, for the actual convention. So I didn't play any games.
Honestly, when I played with my army, I got slaughtered, so I didn't really even use the guys I had on the table. I'm like,
no, well, that's useful. Like, knowing how what not to do is really useful in playing.
You're like, whoa, these guys get slaughtered. I played someone who's really good, so he's like, whoa, you can really slaughter my guys if this happens to them. Okay, I will really hold back these pieces in the back that I need for later, because they're not that hard to kill apparently. So my hit pieces, because it's a smaller point game. You're playing mm-hmm. a duo, so you're not bringing your toughest stuff. You're bringing kind of like your smaller stuff often.
Yep. And we put in a little diorama, like not a fully completed diorama because we didn't really have time. And this was a last minute thing for me. I basically had just finished painting all the stuff I needed like a couple days early. And I'm like, oh, I took off like an extra day of work so that I thought I was going to be last minute painting, but I wasn't. So instead, I last minute built a diorama.
Yeah, it's always cooler to have that to show off your army. Like,
yeah,
a few, maybe like six pairs did dioramas for the duo tournament for Infinity?
Yeah, around six, I think so. Yeah.
They're all quite nice. Like,
yeah, they're all nice. So ours was like fit our theme, which was, you know, true metallic painted, what do you call it? Grim Stark style.
Turning Infinity into 40K, yes.
Yeah.
Which was basically Adeptus Mechanicus and Sisters of Battle combined.
Yep. And I even painted a little space marine, dead space marine, to sit on the side of the diorama.
Yeah.
And we laid it out there. I think it was really nice. I think, you know, we got a lot of compliments for it. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
We put a little bit of lights, although the lights didn't quite work because they didn't finish the entire diorama, but I was like, it's fine. Yeah, it was quite cool. We named our diorama last minute Heresy, which ties into, you know, the whole 40K kind of thing. And it also last minute we like chose it, and it also had a double meaning because in Infinity, like Bakunin, which is my force, and Aleph would never work. Like, they're literally the most enemies of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're playing it, and then we're also so that was really the secondary meaning. But a lot of people, when they heard the name, I was surprised at how big Infinity players like care about Infinity fluff, because that is the thing that really hit them. Mm. It's the Infinity in-game thing, not the 40K kind of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. Even though that was only the secondary reference for us, that was the primary reference for most of the people of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, Infinity gamers really care about the fluff of Infinity.
Yeah, I have all the most recent books. I'm not going to say how much of them I've read. Anyways.
The most recent book is literally why my force was created, because Aleph tried again to take over Bakunin, and then mm-hmm. now we're playing a doubles tournament with them together. So in some ways I can understand. I was just surprised.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that took most of our Friday. That was
Yeah, it was really fun. A lot of the people that we played were good sports, really fun. We didn't play any people that were wasted this time. And I'm not saying that it's like terrible to play against them, but sometimes it's just harder to play
against people. It's hard to have the back and forth Infinity requires to constantly figure out lines and everything it becomes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
It didn't feel like we did super well winning, but apparently we came in fourth. I'm like, I don't know. I thought we just did okay. We played okay.
Well,
we were missing
a lot
of proper...
scoring is different now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The scoring is different than it used to be. So apparently, if you win with five victory, like five objective
points,
that's the maximum points you can get.
Yeah. If you get five out of 10 potential points and you win, you basically max out. So you don't have to grind your opponent into the dirt.
Yes, which was the old way where you needed, it was the difference in spread, I think it was 4 points. So we had actually one minor, two majors. But when I was thinking about it, in the old point system, we would have had three minors, or two minors, one major, right? Which is very, very different score, right? Even though we won all three games. But the other thing that really helped us is because of the armies that we were playing, none of our guys died. So we apparently...
That matters a little bit for tiebreakers.
I'm pretty sure that's why we tie broke higher, because none of our guys died. And I don't know if that's higher than objective points.
I don't think it is. But...
Maybe it is. Maybe that's why we're fourth. I still don't understand. We didn't get that many objective points. But, you know, it is a casual tournament, right? It's doubles. Mm. Everyone is playing, like, weird things. Like, doubles is not an actual tournament format. Right? In Infinity, even though there's a lot of competitive stuff. So a lot of the people showing up just to have fun. And we also bumped into Spud, which we haven't talked to in a while.
Of early Infinity fame when he was going hard. But apparently he went hard this time because he played like in almost every single Infinity event.
Yeah. So. Well, it's basically COVID. He stopped playing for a bit. But like, that's cool. Seeing him get back into Infinity and seeing his beautiful, really the biggest thing is seeing his beautiful armies.
Yeah.
They were really nice. His doubles thing was like
his display board was pretty incredible.
So
it had the height element we were talking about being like, if you build an Infinity diorama, it doesn't have to be wide or deep, but tall is cool. They did that.
Yeah. And he built an entire chibi army, scratch built chibi army.
Yeah.
Of the A-team. So there's an A-team mercenary force, and he literally made that out of Fimo.
Yeah.
Made all the characters, and it was amazing. It was my favorite kind of thing there.
Yeah, it kind of inspired me. Just seeing all the people's proxy models they brought to the duo tournament, I'm like, Infinity has a pretty liberal proxy policy, but people just brought all sorts of sculpted stuff, converted stuff, some other games. I'm like... This doesn't bother me at all because what you did was cool. Like, it's just like, did you follow the rule of cool? I'm okay with that. And because it's not an official Corvus Belli thing, it's just put on by like some of their partners who make terrain pieces. So they're like, yeah, okay, whatever.
I'm pretty sure it's just the local guys. It might be local guys
to their scene, yeah.
In Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Just like, is it? Can person figure out what this is? Yeah, okay, you're good.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of cool proxies and stuff like that going on. Love seeing that.
Yeah. I personally like that one the best, but there was another thing that ended up getting into the armies on parade, which was, I feel like it was definitely cool. It was like an alcohol themed
Malort, some sort of Chicago made hard liquor that's apparently disgusting. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Apparently that was a huge crowd pleaser because, there's a lot of, in terms of miniatures, a lot of young men, right? We're no longer young. It doesn't make as much. Like we said, we didn't even really drink. I drank one glass of wine and it was terrible. Yeah. So I didn't even finish.
If somebody offered us Malort, we wouldn't have drank it.
Yeah.
I would have felt bad
but
about turning
as
it down.
A young person. But. If I was young, it would definitely be my favorite. Like, if I was young and in Chicago, I'd be like, oh, that's hilarious. That's awesome. I love drinking. This is an ode to my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see why it hits on so many levels. And it was nicely made, right? It wasn't just that it was themed and alcohol, but that definitely helped.
And the guys had a banner too. Like they,
yeah, they went pretty hard all, with making yeah, they theme. Went pretty hard. And then, you know, they converted some of the guys to be like bottles of Malort. Some of their their remotes being bottles of Malort. Mm-hmm. And during the army on parade, they had a literal pile of empty Malort bottles in front of their diorama. Mm-hmm. And they said that I overheard them talking about how the Malort, not all of those Malort bottles were theirs. It's just, I don't know how many
if
of them
you were
were
drinking.
Them, sounds like
Malort
there's a
bottles
lot of
here.
Them were
yeah.
theirs.
Leave your empties here. Like how much Malort exactly. was consumed at this Chicago convention?
Isle of Malort. Yeah, so I could definitely see why that was a crowd pleaser ended up winning. Wasn't it didn't speak to me, but I get it.
So on the note of doing like seeing crazy like proxy and conversion stuff, it convinced me to go back in the middle of the tournament between rounds to go back to the Death Ray Designs booth, which is basically one of those Battletech-ish games, but with a bit more emphasis on smaller units, and then buy some of their Tracked Authority stuff, which are kind of like Battletech guys, but with tank treads on them to use as Infinity proxy
Robot
stuff.
Robot tops, tank treads.
Yeah, I'm like, this would look so cool in Infinity. They have the right size bases. Sure. I must go buy this in the middle of the tournament. So I did that in the middle of the tournament.
I ended up buying the Steel Rift rule books because I already had them, and I was planning on playing with the Battletech, the millions of Battletech minis I have.
Yep.
So I did buy from them too, but not the minis.
Those
I had just
guys,
bought too much stuff. I bought too many stuff. I was going to buy some, but I just bought too many other games. Like, I need to paint all of my pirates this year and then actual paint the Relic Blade that I dropped a whole bunch of money on, so I couldn't justify it.
Yeah, that's a future podcast for how we're going to paint everything. Exactly. Anyway, so back to so that was the Friday.
Yeah.
Loads of Infinity tournament. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good
it was really fun. It was really fun. And we ended up, like I said, getting surprised at getting fourth. I was like, oh, we should – do you want to just go? Because I don't know. Was I just hungry? I have no idea what I wanted to leave early. But you're like, oh, no, well, you might as well stay for like the terrain and stuff. And then
we want some MDF terrain. So
yeah,
builds it
because we were fourth, and I was like, "Oh wow, that was surprising." Mm-hmm. Yep. And now I know the Infinity point scoring, how it works. Normally, I just fill it into their online application. I've run Infinity tournaments in the new point thing, but I literally do not pay attention. I just enter it into their application, their online application, and it tells me who wins.
Yeah, well, these guys were using a spreadsheet and trying to type the formulas, and I guess it got screwed up a few times, and they had to, like, redo the spreadsheet. Anyhow, there you go.
All right, so that was
So that was not Friday. A two-day tournament. Yeah, this on note doing two-day tournaments, we've done two-day tournaments before. I think it's too much. Like, the one-day tournament for a game, that's cool. But knowing you have to come back and do it all again, I think it's too much.
I think having a two-day tournament is fine if you're local.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. If you drove all the way.
So you go there, you play it. But like when you're going. So what I mean is that in some ways it's too much. It is not as enjoyable as playing something different every day. You want something unique and special if you're traveling over this period of time, something you can't get back at home. But 2 days is just almost more of the same. I guess for some people, they like the ultra competitive idea of playing 2 days of a tournament so that you can have a giant tournament, right, of 64 or even more people. Where you can actually play out all the games and figure out the one person who went undefeated, right, is the one who wins.
Yeah, or if you're just less of a dabbler than us and you're like, no, this is my game. My game is Age of Sigmar. We're going hard Age of Sigmar all weekend. So if people who really want to get deep into it, they can do that. So yeah, not for us, but I guess if people are really into their game, you can do it too.
Well, to be fair, Age of Sigmar, you have to paint like hundreds of models.
Spent all your painting, you might as well play for 2 days.
Yes, exactly. So in some ways it makes some sort of sense.
So the next day we didn't have any events until later, so we did take way more time on the Saturday to walk around and also look at the Age of Sigmar
stuff.
But looking at the Age of Sigmar armies, Age of Sigmar armies are nice to look at. Like,
that's true.
People put serious effort into those armies. Like, those were some of the best painted armies
we're
we
not
saw.
We're not joking in terms of like
spending
people putting all their spending all your time painting your army. Yeah, like I actually think Age of Sigmar models were like the armies were the best overall painted of large, maybe overall, honestly. They might have had the best painted armies.
Yeah, like the average quality of them was the highest amongst the average quality. Like, yeah. We were playing Infinity and we're like, no, the AOS guys were outdoing us in painting on average. It's you gotta admit it, like it's biased, but I'll still say
And AOS Age of Sigmar guys. Not as big as 40K. And in some ways it makes sense, right? Like Age of Sigmar, people spend all their time on the one army.
Mm-hmm.
So and then it's also a game that doesn't have as many, apparently it hasn't had as many new people coming in recently because the last version wasn't as good, new person friendly. So I guess you have people who are playing are like dedicated Age of Sigmar players who've been playing for years who show up at this tournament. Cause I think you have to be fully painted. So you're not going to get new players, people who are new to painting and stuff like that. Whereas 40K, I feel like you have a lot more newer people cause it's a lot bigger game, right?
Yep.
Recycling in, and the 10th edition was supposed to make it easier for new people to play. So
so we looked, so we spent most of the morning, I think, felt like we looked at a lot of armies
that looked at a lot of stuff day. And bought new stuff,
and we went to the GW booth that day and enjoyed the line at the GW booth.
Was that Saturday?
Yeah, because there wasn't time earlier. Maybe we did it on Thursday.
Oh no, maybe it was
Friday or Saturday?
Oh, it might have been.
It couldn't have been Friday because we played all day. There was no time to sit in that line. Yeah. I think we waited for the exclusives. We're like, if we're not meant to have the exclusive GW's miniatures for our friends, we're not meant to.
No.
No, you think it was the first day?
It was the first day. Oh, it must have been the first day. It was the first day. It was the first day because there were the chibi minis that we wanted to pick up for one of our friends because we were like, he'd almost certainly enjoy it. But I'd already purchased the stuff, so I didn't. I was like, I'll just leave instead
after the cash register. You're like, oh my god, there's more crazy shit after the cash register. It's like you're supposed to put the candy in front of the cash register, not behind the cash register. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of being like, oh, actually, I want this and making them check me out again, I was like, oh, it's fine. But then later on, I was like, you know what? We should have bought it because I feel like one of our buddies would have enjoyed it. But oh, well, it's just a Bandai stuff. So probably you could find it online. Yeah. You know, Bandai stuff is often mass produced, right? So it's a Bandai Warhammer chibi random 40K box. Models. I think it's random. Oh, my God. I should have bought them. I would have bought them for myself. I love random blind boxes.
You'd have bought four and given one away. Yeah. Anyhow, probably. Next year.
Yes. Anyways. So, yeah, on Saturday, the big thing is we played the Arena X tournament, which we talked about. And like usual, it was super fun. This time, there wasn't a drafting thing, which was a little bit complicated last time. So it was just a straightforward, choose your six guys in your cohort, play. It was super fun.
Yeah, I felt like it was Arena Rex. You can actually just sit down and play the game. Like most most tournament games, you look around in the tournament hall, people are standing like really into it. But Arena Rex, all of us were just sitting down. We're just like, let's just chill. We're sitting.
The actual board for Arena Rex is like, I think it's smaller than a 2x2. I think it's 20x20 or something like that. The actual playable area.
Yep.
Like I think the mats were 2x2, but the play area didn't go to the edge, right?
Yeah. So you can reach across the board from your side of the table. You don't have to get up and lean over things, and the terrain is small. So you know it's not exhausting to play because you just sit in your chair. There's eventful things like some dice rolls are like. The game is on this roll.
Oh no, it's such a fun game.
Yeah.
And it totally works for a tournament style because you're playing gladiators in a coliseum, right? Yeah. It is a tournament, yeah.
And you're playing over objectives sort of, but there's usually a win condition on the objective and a win condition on the like just killing everybody. And they do a super good job with coming out with like missions. Just for it. I wish they'd publish them online because these missions are pretty good. And if you knew beforehand what the missions are, I think you could just like build a cheese ball army and win. Yes. But it's like, no, we're going to tell you what it is when you show up.
Yeah.
So you can't like go super hard at this game without knowing what the missions are. I mean, if you really try hard, you could read them. No, he doesn't even give you the missions. He's like, no, I'm not showing you what these missions are.
You do not know what the missions are. Yeah. So you can try to cheeseball a list, hoping that there's going to be a lot of missions that lean into certain things.
Yep.
But the one thing is there was always a pit, which generally when we play like outside of the conventions, we don't have a death pit. And I feel like we should, from the way it seems to be played, there's supposed to be at least one death pit.
Yeah, and when you buy the miniatures, they often come with like a piece of terrain.
With a death pit?
They come with a paper death pit.
Oh, that makes sense. So you're supposed to have a death pit.
A lot of the mechanics revolve around pushing things, people and pulling people. And I'm like, yeah, this is only, you really care about this because you're going to push people in the pit. And you've got to learn, when you learn the game, when you play that way, you've got to learn how to position around those pits.
Well, so the way we play is we have spike and exhaust terrain instead. So it's not an immediate death, but you take 3 damage and you get exhausted.
So you can't attack back right away, which is really, you get more damage on, it's easier to damage the guys who are exhausted. Yeah. So
that's the way we do it. But the death pit is kind of fun. Also, from the rules of Nero, his special thing when he transforms is he can move guys into another spot, but that does not work against non-area terrain. So like a pit is an area terrain, but he can't throw a guy in, which I thought he could, but you know, apparently he can't throw a guy into a spike wall. He can only throw a guy into a pit. So I'm like, oh, for Nero to really work, there needs to be a pit so he can just toss him in there.
Yeah, I think it might be for that game, when you have pre-built armies and you're playing just your friends, not having somebody else organize it, it might be best just to roll off to see what terrain appears. So you can't just cheeseball your friends and be like, ha, 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 I brought the stuff that throws you in the pits and I put 4 pits on the table.
It would be interesting that there's like a set, like, I don't know, 3 set versions of terrain. Like, one's a pit, it seems like the 2 things that he always put to make everything work was a pit and an animal in every single thing. But it would be interesting if you had like a pit and an animal, which is apparently the way that, you know, when we've gone to these tournaments is the main way, that you have one like pit, like no pits, but spikes and walls, and then one with like an animal and spikes, you know, like a set number of things, terrain placements where you can put either of them, right? Maybe one is 3 animals would be cool, and one would be 3 pits.
Yeah, like a couple cards that you draw them and you're like, bam, we're playing this.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be cool for the game in the future. But you know,
actually, yeah, anyways, the games
you can always make that with your friends.
Yeah, so I've now played 3 tournaments in Arena Rex. The one of them didn't quite hit because it got placed late, so there was not very many people showing up, but I did win that tournament. And then, it was still fun. I was just playing against only one guy. But the other two with like a full like contingent of guys where we had, 5 rounds, we played 5 different people. It was, 5 is a lot of games, but
yeah. But like I said, great. You can sit down, so it's not like, it's not killing you, playing 5 rounds of another game.
And the other thing is that, unlike a lot of other games, because it's played with gladiators in the theme, if you run out of time, the person with the most life wins. Yep, health wins, left. Right? And it feels right in a gladiator game, right? That if you run out of time, if people are just, you know, taking their time, eventually, you know, the crowds are like, whatever, time to get off. Right?
Yeah, it's time to go home.
And they just award one person to win, right? So even that feels like good, even if you're playing out to the very end of the game, as long as someone is not trying to like slow the game down just so that he doesn't get attacked, right? But yeah, overall, again, I guess because of the game and the way that it's positioned, it was really fun. Like a lot of really casual guys that just want to have fun, play out the different cool things that happen in an Arena Rex, like a gladiator game, which definitely happens. Like we said, guys tossing guys into pits, kicking someone into a pit. There was one where there was a spinning wheel in the center that would throw you off occasionally into a pit.
Yep.
It was awesome. Great fun.
I know. there was one tactic where one of the guys had one dude which was worth most of his points. So like, here's exactly what I'm gonna do to throw your guy in the pit, because I don't want to be like, I'm mostly lost, but I don't want to like be a jerk about playing the game. He's like, oh, okay. There's no way he could stop it. I was like, all right, I'm going for it now. It didn't work. I would have won the game like completely, but I lost. Yeah. So just, you can go for broke to do some crazy stuff in that game if you want to do it. You can go super high risk.
Yeah. Yeah, you can often go super high risk, and if the dice are with you, like, you either lose immediately or you come back with a vengeance. So mm-hmm. that's great. I love that. It's the same kind of push and pull mechanic that Infinity has. Not the exact same, but like the same type of gameplay, which not a lot of other games have enough of. So
it's difficult to like allow that high risk thing, because sometimes like, oh, this high risk thing you do, well, this the swingy thing, like you can do things that are swingy, but if they do it wrong, it might actually be low risk. Like the risk might not be commensurate with like the amount of swing you can cause by it. But in both those games, like you can just swing for the fences and possibly get it.
Yep. Yeah, it feels right where most of the time, if you're up or even, you don't want to swing. Mm-hmm. But if you're really down, you have a chance to swing it back, right? Yep. War Machine had it as well, actually, with certain casters. Not all casters, but certain casters could do that, where they're like, because you have caster kill, you could just be like, okay, the only way I'm going to win is if I move my caster out there. They can't kill my caster, then I can win.
I take my leader and I try and kill your leader with some combo. This is really like low percent, less than 10%, but you know, I've lost.
The best part is when you need to have your caster survive. So you're like, okay, I'm just going to run him up here into the center of the board. If you don't deal with him, which you most likely will, then I can have a chance to win, right? Yep. Especially, so.
Or the game ends because you just...
because then you can just kill my caster. Yeah. So,
so that went all day.
Yeah.
Well, that went from one that to was, like nine. That was a long.
Yeah, it was long, but good. Super fun. The guy who does it is also the guy who created the game. And there's also a secondary win condition, but it's also somewhat primary because there's a second points track. Mm-hmm. You get points by doing things in the missions that don't help you win. But they do help you they do basically choose who gets to choose their
prizes first.
It's an entirely different track. If you win, you do get a prize for if you win the tournament.
You get some gift cards for the store.
So you do get the equivalent of winning a bunch of stuff. But if you're not, like, the prize track makes a lot more sense. You want to be on the top of that so you can get the best prizes first. It's because there's like a bunch of different prizes. There's some that is like three guys, where some that's that's one guy, right? And the prize support in the game is great, right? To be fair, you do pay for it, right? Because the entry cost is high, but you do get that money back from the miniatures that you get.
So I want a pack, starter pack. Yeah. So then, for a different army I don't have. So the next day, that brings us to... So the next day, of course, because I got a starter pack for that army in Arena Max, I got to buy more of the faction. I just have to.
Of course. So. Like we said, the game is great. If you go to a convention, definitely, and you have an army of Arena Rex, definitely go and play. You're going to have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So the Arena Rex booth was nicely positioned next to the Corvus Belli booth. So once we finished purchasing those things, we basically turned around 180 degrees and then played a demo of Warcrow from the game that's going to come out from Corvus Belli. Like, not their dungeon crawling Kickstarter thing, but the game they're actually going to put out there.
Yep. And honestly, we talked about that game before, right? And we heard, there was a... The seminar, they only talked about they mostly talked about Warcrow, because the guy who was the Infinity one wasn't there. So we mostly talked about Warcrow. And I wasn't super interested in Warcrow, even though I'd watched people play the demo and the models are nice.
Yeah.
But after we played the demo, I was actually impressed. Like, watching it felt a little bit fiddly and overly complicated, but playing it was a lot more smooth.
Playing it actually felt very smooth.
There's a couple of things that were a little bit weird, but overall, like a couple of things where I'm like, oh, this seems a little bit more fiddly than it needs to be. But overall, the gameplay was fun, interesting. They have the fun switch mechanics from Aristeia.
Yeah, where you've got basically the dice in the game have symbols on them. So you've got your basic success and defense symbols, but on top of that, there's like your special ability trigger symbols, which some guys you care to get those off on, some guys you don't care about them as much. So
and they have different and use different dice, so that have a different weight of symbols. Mm-hmm. So technically, of course, they're all D8s, right? So technically, you could make a different table for different dice.
But it'd be hard.
But it would just be a super pain in the butt where I'm like, okay, so I'm rolling one defensive dice, which on a 1-3 means this, and a 4-6 means I get a skill and an action, and an 8, I mean, two attacks. And then I have one attack dice, which means I have, instead, I have three attacks, right? Or I guess it's two attacks, or a crit on this dice, and then only one attack, but I only have three defenses on the lower ones, right? Yeah. Well, if you have the special dice, you can roll them all at the same time. It's really quick to play.
Yeah, it means that more than one thing happens during like your attack. So like, okay, my attacks do damage, but also they could do cool tactical things on the board at the same time. So you've got one roll going on, but multiple mechanics out of the same roll, which is it's a pretty fun mechanic.
Yep, and with a balance of defense, attack, and switches.
Yeah, and I think there's a ability to push your luck or exert yourself or whatever you want to call it. You can exert yourself more, which gives you more of a risk of running away later because you've overexerted yourself. Mm-hmm. But it lets you add some dice to your pool to kind of like up the risk again, which is it's fun.
Yeah,
you're like, I want to up the ante on this one. You're like, oh, you're gonna up the ante. I'm gonna up the ante.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
And then the other interesting thing is every turn or every round is two actions each.
We didn't get a perfect demo because it was just one of the guys who runs the store in the booth doing it.
Well, he did demos and stuff like that, but he did basically what one of the designers was there. So he could basically go back and ask them for questions. Mm-hmm. So he did need to get some clarifications because I guess we asked hard questions.
Yeah, we played too many games. We're just like, okay, there's every war game needs a mechanic for this, and this. He's like, I don't necessarily know every single one of those mechanics. Really, you're just playing with three units and just they fight in the middle. It wasn't the whole game experience. It's mostly like, okay, you don't have any shooting guys. Yeah. You start punching each other in the middle. Check this out.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting and fun. There's a lot of different stuff happening in the game that makes it interesting. And of course, touching the miniatures, I know you're not. That's not supposed to matter, but it totally does.
Yeah,
like 2 feet away from 1 foot away, and looking at the miniatures is very different.
And picking it up yourself, I
think. Yeah, picking up the models, seeing like that they're really well sculpted. You said that it was Javier Arena who did these.
Yeah, he did a lot of them. I don't know if he did all of them. Maybe not the ones we were playing with, but I know he's done some of them.
I think he would have because that's the main. Those are the most of the models they've showed off.
Yeah.
So he must have done some of those as well.
Anyways, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, Jay Varan really is just our favorite 3D sculptor for miniatures. Yes.
So I think if the game has like a cool narrative thing going on to string all the games together and encourage you to play, because the objectives feel I don't know. For fantasy, I don't feel like bringing a fantasy army and just being like, yeah, we're punching each other. I've gotten too used to Frostgrave. We're like, oh, it's part of a grander narrative thing, and now I've gotten stuck into it. And I don't think it doesn't have the same complex puzzle thing that you try to solve on the board in Infinity. So I think it could benefit from like a back narrative story thing going on with it.
Yeah, well, I guess we only ran like a simple demo. Like imagine if you played Infinity, but you only ran like three cheerleaders, like three line infantry and one guy with an HMG. Like it will seem like a very simple game, but it is the opposite of that.
I mean, you can do a lot of crazy things even with three guys in Infinity at close quarters. There'd be a lot of maneuvers you have to
there's a lot of different things that was happening in the game that we're playing. That's the thing, but it felt pretty good, and I could see where it could expand out and be more complicated and more interesting, which is what I also enjoyed. And there was interesting things with terrain about how that affects your charges and things like that. After two rounds, everyone who didn't activate gets a free move so they can kind of close in, which is also interesting. So there's just a lot of Yeah. Whereas, like, most of the battle could be literally two units on your side, just like your hero unit and the unit beside them. Those are the guys that are fighting all the way through, right?
If they somehow, just like defended themselves really well, and the opponents, yep, the attacks always and like then flubbed.
All of your other guys could just be moving and defending and holding the place in line, right?
I guess there's some healing mechanics too. They could just be like supporting guys.
Yeah, you could literally have your army be like Infinity, right? You could have your army based around one hero murdering the entire enemy force, and he uses the majority of your action points, because basically if you can use basically the same unit every other turn, every other activation, and there's no negatives.
Yeah, unless they do something that causes them to become more fatigued, yeah, or whatever. That's they become not more from, exhausted.
Yes, exactly. So there's an exhaustion mechanic, and that stays on. Mm-hmm. But if all you're doing is just activating them every other turn, you can activate them and you have no penalties, which is interesting.
Yeah. So to see where that goes.
Yeah.
And then we took off after that. So that was Sunday.
Well, no. On Sunday, we walked around one last time and purchased some stuff. And then.
Oh, yeah, we bought more. Yeah. We bought more Infinity stuff. It's on the floor.
Yeah, we had to do that. One last hurrah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was Adepticon. How did you find this Adepticon versus the last Adepticon?
I felt like it was more relaxing because we knew what was going on. Like, the first Adepticon, we're like, what the fuck is over here? What the fuck is over there? Oh my god, this is all crazy. Yeah. How do we get from here to here? How do we even eat? This time we're just like, oh no, we got this covered. So.
That was one last thing. We went to this amazing restaurant.
You have to go during the day unless it was like open late for Ramadan. Yes.
Yeah, it was open. Yeah,
do you
exactly.
even remember the
it was
name
open
of it?
Late for Ramadan. Yeah, hopefully Ramadan lines up for convention.
I don't think their calendar works that way.
But yeah, it was awesome. It was called like Sorry Mommy, I think.
Yeah.
I don't get the name of the thing, but it was really good. It was the Southeast Asian Muslim cuisine.
It's a family restaurant.
So much better than all the times we've gone to conventions before where you're just getting like crap around the place. It was like you said, it was an actual restaurant. We drove a little bit to get there, but it was totally worth it. It made the entire experience like, I don't know, you don't expect to get good food at a convention. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Go eat one good meal at Adepticon. You only need one good meal.
Like,
otherwise, that's
not... Yeah, you have 3 or 4 days. Get a good meal one time.
This is not your vacation where you want to show people your food pictures after. This is
I showed my parents
that
my
food picture.
Pick up at that one place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, they care about your vacation pictures of your food.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're family.
Okay. That's what I said. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, that was our trip to Adepticon. And do you think that you would – what do you think about next year? Do you think we need a break? Because we've been doing a bunch of conventions, at least I did. I went to 3.
Yeah.
I went Adepticon, Gen Con, Adepticon. That's like a lot.
Yeah, we're not local. So it's like it is a big thing to go there. So I think a breather year, like there's nothing wrong. 2 years in a row seemed fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a breather year is always good. Do some more local stuff next year.
Yeah. It does make me wish there was a local convention, a bigger local convention that we can go to besides the more GW stuff. And there are a couple. Don't get me wrong. There are. But like with the more complete miniature hobbying kind of experience that Adepticon is, but I guess that's just being like,
well,
I wish the best stuff was local.
Biggest in the world was right next door. Yeah. Anyways, so the moral is you have to go sort of support your local stuff and run the events you want to see, because we have conventions like that that'll let you run your, they'll actually let you run stuff yourself. So.
Yeah, we should definitely
think about that.
We can do that and build the idea of smaller miniature gaming. To these other events, it'd be great.
Yep. All right.
This has been this episode of Dice Over Everything and our trip to Adepticon. If you have any questions about Adepticon, about the future conventions, or anything else, you just want to comment, give us a shout at contact@diceovereverything.com.
Or find us on Facebook, we're Dice Over Everything.
This has been Alan.
Yeah, it's been Brandon.
Bye.